President Trump gave his State of the Union address last night in front of a joint session of Congress promoting a strong U.S. economy and low unemployment. Trump called for bipartisanship in his speech, but also dug in on divisive issues like abortion rights and building a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border. In the Democratic response, Stacey Abrams, former candidate for governor in Georgia, focused on the issue of voting rights and called the recent government shutdown a stunt engineered by President Trump. Lily Gorin is a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. Her books include Women in the White House and Mad Men in Politics. Lily, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on today.
Before we dig into the details, Lily, your overall impression of this State of the Union address?
It was a little long. And it had a lot of different agenda points. A lot of them, you know, things that Trump has talked about before, very long section on immigration. But it wasn't necessarily a State of the Union where you could say, okay, this is where the Trump administration is going to go next. And a lot of the time presidents, after they give a State of the Union address with a lot of policy points, will often go out into the country advocating for particular aspects of that agenda. And that's, again, how to sort of capitalize on the State of the Union. Obviously, Trump does things a little differently with regard to use of social media. He doesn't do a lot of that sort of going to sell his policy plans per se the way previous presidents have. And so it's not clear also if he will capitalize on the State of the Union through Twitter the way he often uses it.
Now, illegal immigration and the border wall were a big part of the speech. No surprise. Here's a little of what the president had to say.
Working class Americans are left to pay the price for mass illegal immigration. Reduced jobs, lower wages, overburdened schools, hospitals that are so crowded you can't get in, increased crime, and a depleted social safety net.
So the president saying, hey, working class people are affected by illegal immigration. The political class doesn't understand this. What do you make of him framing border security along those lines?
And this is, you know, this is sort of how he has often approached some of the questions around border security and immigration in general, that it is about jobs for Americans who are here, and that, you know, that there's a tension between people who are coming to the United States and wanting to have jobs or lives here. And so this is not necessarily a new approach. And I think we also heard some of this from the president when he gave, a primetime address during the government shutdown, talking about the need for the wall and immigration reform.
A strange moment in the address, the president talking about the value of legal immigration said he wanted to see legal immigration at higher levels than before. I've read that was an ad lib from the original prepared remarks. Did that surprise you?
That did, because he and other members of his administration have actually called for lower levels of legal immigration. And so given that it was an ad lib, it wasn't in the speech itself, and it's not necessarily something that I've heard from him clearly articulated in that way before.
In the Democratic response, Stacey Abrams, a former candidate for governor in Georgia, addressed the issue of border security as well. Here's some of what she had to say.
We know bipartisanship could craft a 21st century immigration plan, but this administration chooses to cage children and tear families apart. Compassionate treatment at the border is not the same as open borders. President Reagan understood this. President Obama understood this. Americans understand this.
With what we're hearing from both sides, do you expect to see any kind of actual compromise on border security?
There may be a compromise bill that comes out of the House and the Senate and the Democrats and Republicans. Whether the president will sign it remains to be seen. But, you know, the State of the Union address didn't necessarily provide a clear sort of parameter that the president said, OK, I'm willing to give this for this. We didn't hear that in the State of the Union address. We did hear again about his desire to have a structural wall and on the southern border, and a lot of discussion again about the southern border of the United States. And so that is where his focus has been with regard to an immigration sort of deal.
Talking to Lily Gorin from Carroll University, looking at the State of the Union address last night. You can join in with your reactions at 800-642-1234. Now, talking about the health of the economy, a lot of attention to this here. President Trump put in a mention of the Mueller investigation and possible House Democratic investigations. Here's a listen.
An economic miracle is taking place in the United States, and the only thing that can stop it are foolish wars, politics, or ridiculous partisan investigations.
And he reiterated that point. What do you make of the president directly addressing the investigations of his campaign, his presidency, and so on?
Well, he's groused about the investigations essentially since he was elected. And there was some investigations, you know, early on that catapulted into the Mueller probe. And so he's been complaining about them for some time. And, you know, he's sort of continues to complain about them. At the same time, now you have the change of the majority in the House, and the House will have this power that it was not used for the most part by the Republicans when they were in the majority during the Trump administration to investigate some of the questions with regard to cabinet members and the campaign and so forth. But, you know, the Republican Congress did spend a lot of time during the Obama administration investigating a variety of things, including things like the Benghazi incident and so forth. Investigations by Congress and oversight are one of their responsibilities.
We've already seen a tweet since then from the president targeting House Democrat Adam Schiff, a key figure on a key committee here. We've seen a House Democratic committee share some of their interview materials now with the Mueller probe and pledging to go ahead with investigations along, I think, five different fronts related to President Trump, his campaign, and his business. Are we going to see a lot of action in the House now, do you think?
I have a feeling that the Democratic committees, a lot of them will be moving forward with a variety of investigations. And again, not just necessarily of President Trump and the campaign and so forth, but there's also been, you know, a number of cabinet and sub-cabinet members who have had some questionable sort of travel and so forth. And they may also, I think, come under some investigation as well.
Healthcare was also touched on last night. President Trump said it was going to be a top issue going forward. Here's one of his priorities.
The next major priority for me and for all of us should be to lower the cost of healthcare and prescription drugs and to protect patients with pre-existing conditions.
And Stacey Abrams in the Democratic response raised some of the same issues. Let's look at that prescription drug cost issue. Is this one thing where actually there could be some bipartisan cooperation?
In terms of healthcare, that is certainly an area where there's been a lot of discussion, and Congress has been sort of paying attention to this and has already held some hearings with regard to some of the elevated costs of high-profile drugs and so forth. And so I think this may be an area where, you know, there is comedy between members of Congress, the president, and that they may be able to forge an alliance on looking at and trying to figure out how to reduce some of the costs of prescription drugs.
Now, protecting patients with pre-existing conditions, though, that exists under the Affordable Care Act, which is still around in a somewhat modified form now, but it's there already. So that's I don't know. There's not necessarily room for cooperation on that.
No, I mean, this seems to be an area of policy that was a real sort of key point of the Affordable Care Act during the Obama administration. And it's one that members and senators have run on in terms of, you know, continuing to strengthen healthcare policy and make sure that pre-existing conditions are protected as an area that, you know, that that health insurance cannot throw you off because of them or other outcomes. So in that regard, there's, you know, this does exist. There is some concern that if you sort of continue to strip away at aspects of the Affordable Care Act, that includes getting rid of the protections for pre-existing conditions.
We're talking to Lily Gorin right now, professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University, looking back at last night's State of the Union address. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you watch? Did you listen? Did you read about it afterward? What were your takeaways from last night's speech from President Trump and the Democratic response from Stacey Abrams? Are there areas where you think the president and Democrats in Congress could work together, should work together? Do you think a potential government shutdown this month is more or less likely based on what you heard? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about last night's State of the Union address. Lily Gorin is with us, professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What did you think of President Trump's speech last night? The tone he struck, the issues he chose to focus on, or what wasn't in the speech? Do you think anything can get done now with a divided Congress? And what do you think of the Democratic response from Stacey Abrams? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Chris is with us in Beaver Dam. Chris, hello.
Hi. Yeah, I thought that the State of the Union was actually pretty outstanding. I think he made points more succinctly and more, you know, that you can actually understand than he has through Twitter and other media. And I think he did indicate a compromise. He talked about protecting 1.8 Dreamers, and that's way more than the 900,000 that have registered under DACA. And I think that the Democrat response is just another stall. They don't actually want to work together with anybody if it actually produces an outcome. And this is a divided Congress. You have to work together, which means, you know, not pounding fists on the wall, but actually sitting down and working toward a solution, which I hope they get to.
Chris, thanks a lot for calling in. Lily, he says, okay, President Trump has put this compromise on the table involving Dreamers. He did that in a speech earlier as well. Is this a starting point? We've been close to here before, it seems like.
Yeah, and I think that this is, again, part of the legislation that was put together by the House and the Senate before the end of the last Congress in December. And so you have, again, you have a divided Congress with a majority of Democrats in the House and a majority of Republicans in the Senate. So whatever is going to come out in terms of a compromise has to make it through both those houses with those two different majorities and also make it to the president's desk for his signature. And so it's not always been clear that the Republicans in the Senate are totally on board with where the president wants to go. And that's also been part of the complicated nature of this particular issue area and the way that our system works, which is, you know, again, we don't have a parliamentary system. So you have, you know, divided government in a variety of structural ways as well as partisan ways.
Chris, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Chris also thought that President Trump used the speech and the venue to make his points, he said, more concisely and clearly than, say, in his tweets or maybe than in his rallies over time. This is a different kind of speaking environment than we often see from President Trump.
It is a different form of speaking, as you say, because it's not a rally. It is the formal setting of the House of Representatives, with, you know, the chamber full, with members of the Supreme Court there, and the cabinet and invited guests, obviously the First Lady, who was given a call out by the president and had her, you know, her box with a number of high profile individuals who the president acknowledged during the course of this speech, which has been a, you know, sort of part of the State of the Union since Ronald Reagan started to sort of do that during his State of the Union addresses. But this, you know, this speech was almost as long as the longest speech, State of the Union speech, which was given by Bill Clinton during his administration. And again, that takes into account how many times people stand up and how long the ovations are. But it was not, you know, it was not a sort of 45-minute speech. 45 minutes was about halfway through it.
We heard from a caller named Kay who is wondering how the president can make the case that the ongoing Mueller probe and congressional investigation would impact the economy. Do you see a connection there?
I don't know exactly how the Mueller probe would per se impact the economy, but there is discussion that if the president does move to shut down the government again, that can have adverse effect on the economy.
Talking to Lily Gorin from Carroll University in Waukesha, looking at last night's State of the Union address. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. AJ is with us in Green Bay. AJ, hello.
Hi there. I was just making a comment about the previous caller about how he's blaming the Congress for stall. Isn't that the pot calling the kettle black? When President Obama was in office and then the Republicans took over Congress and everything, isn't it exactly what they did? And all of a sudden, well, now everything's the president's fault. Well, you can't have it both ways.
AJ, thanks a lot for the call. When you look at an issue like judicial nominees, say, Lily, we've definitely seen stalling from whichever side doesn't have the presidency, right?
You have seen some, but there are also moves to change some of the structures and processes in the Senate. And so you have also seen quite, you know, Donald Trump has a record now of nominating and having confirmed more judges and justices in the federal bench at this point in his presidency, I think, than any previous president.
Is that because of structural changes in the Senate to streamline that?
And the fact that that's an area where he has, you know, been very fast to nominate lots and lots of people. And the majority in the Senate, the Republican majority in the Senate, has moved through a lot of those nominees and confirmed them. One of the points that the president brought up during the course of his speech was that there has been a lag in terms of the confirmation of people to executive positions, but the Trump administration has also been quite slow in nominating people to the second and third level of executive positions. And so there are still quite a few, say, ambassadorships that remain unfilled by the Trump administration.
Let's bring on another caller now. Ben is with us in La Crosse. Ben, hi.
Hi. I guess I was listening earlier to a gentleman caller who was speaking about how he thought the president was being more concise about his objectives and his speech, and I would disagree. It just appeared to me as he was rehashing everything he had promised to do, but yet was unsuccessful in completing.
Ben, thanks for the call. So rehashing things, Ben says, that the president has been talking about, maybe even since he was on the campaign trail.
I mean, again, you had about a sixth of the speech that was on immigration, you know, and it was a lot of different aspects of immigration and included highlighting a variety of personal stories that the president wanted to draw attention to, which is, again, what presidents do in terms of policy areas. And immigration and the border wall have been, you know, part of Donald Trump's sort of campaign and his presidency since the very beginning. And so that section of the speech was, you know, something that many of us have read or heard from Donald Trump over the course of the last 3 years. Other aspects were, you know, a little bit different. He did, you know, sort of talk about the more women being employed. And of course, there was the sort of groundswell in the House among the newly elected women House members and so forth. And there was a lot of discussion in the speech also about World War II. We had quite a few World War II veterans there that he drew attention to. So there was also a kind of nostalgic referencing to other times when the United States had triumphed.
In our last minute or so, Lily, regardless of who the president is, we make a lot of hullabaloo in the state about the State of the Union, the big ceremony, lots of media coverage, lots of conversations like this one. Do they really change anything? Do they move the conversation very much?
They can sometimes, but again, it's usually when the speech is also sort of followed by a lot of very precise moves to enact the agenda. So did the Trump administration move forward with its allies in Congress with very specific bills that, again, are, say, talking about funding for AIDS HIV research and eradication that he did highlight and mention in the speech? Are there other pieces of legislation that moved through Congress today or this week that are, again, are pulling up parts of the speech that he gave last night? And so it's, you know, it is a speech, but then it's also this question of agenda setting and moving forward to sort of enact policy.
Lily, thanks a lot for joining us again.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Lily Gorin is a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. She was with us to look back at President Trump's State of the Union address last night. Later in the show, we'll talk more about the key points from last night with two guests from differing political viewpoints, and we'll ask you to join the conversation again as well. And you can join it right now if you'd like electronically. You can email ideas@WPR.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page what stood out to you the most about the president's address and or the Democratic response to it.